It's Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010, and you're listening to episode 183 of Fear the Duke, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 12 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
I'm still Wayne.
I'm Pat.
Hey, I'm Chris.
You guys will recall, a little while back, we did a fundraiser thing with the March of Dimes. We have a forum user by the name of Necronomatron who had, and I don't know how to put a fine point on this, but he and his wife lost an infant daughter. And he decided to do something good with this, turn this tragedy into a moment of hope, and set up a fundraiser through the March of Dimes, which Fear the Boot participated in. Well, they're coming around to their yearly fundraiser walk again, and he has requested the help of the Fear the Boot community in making it a success. And he also gave me a little bit of an update on how he did last year. And I was going to put this in my own words, but truth be told, I think what he wrote says it pretty well. So I'm just going to read what this guy posted on our forums. So he says, "Once again, my wife, and possibly myself as well, is going to be participating in the March for Babies fundraiser in support of the March of Dimes. Last year, I get a load of this, she earned the March of Dimes Top Walker Award for our city and second for the region. This means that she brought in more donations of any individual in the city. In addition, the team as a whole, Raina's Wings, was the second highest earner of donations in our city, coming in second place to Kmart. The Fear the Boot community accounted for about 25% of the donations made on behalf of Raina's Wings last year." So before I continue, let that sink in for a minute. The only group that was able to beat what these guys were doing was a corporation. And within that group that came in second only to a corporation, our listeners accounted for about 25% of the donations they got. The gaming community in general just never ceases to blow me away with its decency, its compassion. You know, there's people out there who love to say that we're just a bunch of nihilistic, self-involved jerks. And whether it's this, whether it's what we did going back with Ziggurat Con, whether it's World Vision, whether it's the stuff we did with Dan's Not Quite Long Enough, whether it's the stuff not even directly involved with us, like Drive-Thru's Relief for Haiti with Doctors Without Borders, Penny Arcade's Child's Play, this community just shows again and again and again that we are not anything like how people want to paint us. So continuing this, he says, "I know that for many people, this is a time of financial struggle. And with the recent catastrophe in Haiti and the hundreds of other just causes that are vying for your charitable dollar, there's only so much one person can do. But if you feel so inclined, we would greatly appreciate any help that could be offered in order to fund the work the March of Dimes supports." So I'm going to post a link to this in the show notes. I'm dedicating right now that I am going to make a donation towards this. I hope you guys will as well. As he said, I know this is a rough time financially and there's a lot of stuff going on. But if you can spare even just a small donation, then please get out there and donate to it. It's a great cause. My dream is that by the time our grandchildren are gaming, they will be spending all their money on frivolous, nihilistic products because problems like this won't exist anymore. And I realize history and life being what it is, that will probably never happen. But you know what? We're going to keep fighting that good fight. Please do take a look at the show notes. And if you can afford anything, even if it's just a small donation, then get out there and donate to this. It's a great cause. And let's not let any other family have to go through what this family had to go through. And my hat is off to this gentleman, to Necronomatron and his wife, for having the courage to be so public with their pain and leverage that in a way to keep anyone else, like I said, from having to go through this in the future. That's our hope. May this organization succeed in everything it's trying to do. Second announcement, and this one is far more lighthearted. As you guys know, since we've mentioned it once or twice, Fear the Con 3 is coming up here. But something that we have not mentioned, or at least not put in stone yet, and I'm doing right now, is there are a bunch of people that have said, for whatever reason, they're coming in Wednesday night as opposed to coming in Thursday.
You're sending them all to Pat's house, right?
Absolutely. Pat's got a big house. There's lots of floor space.
That's right.
So email Pat at feartheboot.com if you need crash
sleep
space.
Over at my place.
Pat's cardboard box is really huge, everybody.
And he gets free roofie coladas.
Yep.
If you like roofy coladas, remembering nothing the next day.
I don't need to expand from there. That's fantastic.
We're not going to kick off the official festivities until the wing night on Thursday, the con on Friday and Saturday, and then the after con tourism stuff on the Sunday through Wednesday of the next week, which I've been told overlaps with St. Patrick's Day. So we may find something to do involving St. Patrick's Day, because St. Louis has a really weird set of traditions surrounding St. Patrick's Day.
I wonder what you can do on St. Patrick's Day in a social situation. I'm kind of stumped as for options there.
It's pretty much another excuse for the city to get drunk. We just had a lot of green food coloring.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. There are parties everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, if you are coming in Wednesday night and are interested in meeting up with people, starting at 7 o'clock p.m., there is a restaurant down the road. Well, the restaurant will be there before 7, but there is a restaurant down the road from the hotel called Maryland Yards, and I will link an address for it in the show notes. And starting at 7 o'clock p.m., we are going to congregate there just to take it easy, have some drinks, just hang out. If spontaneous gaming breaks out or we decide to move somewhere else to do something different, hey, who knows? But starting at 7 o'clock p.m., we are going to be hanging out at Maryland Yards. And so if you are coming in on Wednesday night, check the show notes for that link, and we hope you will meet up with us there.
So I liken this unto, it's sort of like the early bird special at Maryland Yards. See, I think Chris will go in for this.
He'd be eligible for
the early bird special thing.
Yeah, that sounds like right up my alley, but no, I won't be there until Thursday. You know what? This is totally off topic, but speaking of getting old, you know what I got in the mail the other day? I got some literature from the scooter store.
Oh, there you go.
I get home. Yeah, I get home after work, you know, and I'm just like, oh man, what a crappy day at work. Whatever. I go to go get the mail and I pull out this envelope. It has a little icon of the scooter on the outside of the envelope. It says the scooter store. Check to see if you're eligible.
That's how we fund Fear the Con.
Yeah.
We give the tickets fairly cheap. We include a lot of stuff in it. The way that we pay for Fear the Con is every year we have it at the same place. The only way to get to the lower level is stairs. And then we sue because Chris can't make it down the stairs.
That's true.
Unless they put a chairlift in. And paying me off is cheaper than putting a chairlift in.
Absolutely.
And so that's how we fund the con. All right. So, Chris.
Yes. What?
There's something that came up between... Well, I'd say you and me, but it wasn't just you and me. It was you, me, Wayne, and Chad.
You know, and it really just started off as a joke, but go ahead.
Yeah. And this goes into a larger topic about gaming in general. Right now, a group of us, it's several of us that know each other through the show and then some people off the forum, so I guess they know us through the show as well, are playing a game of Diplomacy via a web version of the game at playdiplomacy.com. And you and I had this little mini debate about the best strategy to approach Diplomacy from.
To me, it was more of a strategy / ethics debate, almost.
You know, I took it more as a, people always talk about, can you lose friends while playing Diplomacy? No, there doesn't seem to be a problem there. It's, can you lose friends while arguing about Diplomacy on a, you know, through an email chain?
So the thing that you wanted to talk about that kind of spun off from this is the broader topic of keeping your feelings in check during a game. Now, this could be a game like Diplomacy, where at least a perceived mechanic of the game is the necessity to backstab people.
See, I love how you couch that, because because you've made it very clear that you firmly believe that the game itself does not need to be that way at all.
No.
And that's just presumed.
Absolutely.
Whereas I take the tack that essentially is written into the rules. I mean, even if you go to the website itself, the picture on the main page of the website is a guy with several knives in his back. So, I mean, I know that I'm not alone with my presumption.
Well, I know it also makes a difference if you're looking at a solo victory versus a, we've agreed the two or three of us are going to be the winners at the end versus I am going to be the winner. If you come in with an I am going to be a winner, I don't think there is any way you can do that without
certainly, but I will agree with Chris. To me, it is a perception. I think people have come to expect that this is the Diplomacy thing. We were just talking about St. Patrick's Day. If you're going to go on a St. Patrick's Day, you have to wear your green shirt and your Kiss Me, I'm Irish pin and just basically make a general idiot out of yourself, especially since the vast majority of people doing it are not even vaguely Irish.
And, but you know what? If Chris were to do it, he would go down there wearing orange and he would literally get stabbed in the back. So there you go.
But then when they saw that I bleed green because I am Irish, then they would feel really bad about
that. Well, orange is from Sir William of Orange. It means you're Protestant.
Yep.
Well, Chris is Catholic. He would wear green.
I was just saying that, you know, he would go about the wrong way.
Oh, okay.
He'd go to a St. Patrick's Day parade in St. Louis wearing orange.
The point being, though, that was deep, Pat. Yeah, I think this whole you have to backstab people is a perception of how diplomacy has to be played. But that's a side tangent argument about a single game. Let's talk about the broader topic here. So, Chris, go ahead.
And I think, you know, when it comes down to it, we play games, A, because they're fun. But when it comes to, well, I mean, this is even somewhat true for role-playing games. But as a species, we're generally just very competitive people. You know, everything in our life does kind of revolve in a certain way around competition of some sort. But when you're around that isolated center of the gaming table, it can get very heated depending upon how much you get into it. It doesn't matter if it's diplomacy, doesn't matter if it's a game of risk. Hell, it could even be something as simple and as mundane as sorry. Everybody just gets their ass burned when they get nailed by a sorry, especially if they've got three guys in home. And so how do you make sure that you separate those feelings of competitiveness and enjoying the game for what it is and what it's there to be, as opposed to thinking, man, we were just out having drinks and now this jerk is completely stabbing me in the back and I bought him around.
Yeah, I know, in my case, when I'm playing with my wife, I learned to duck to the left because she'll throw a little to the right when she's angry and throwing stuff.
I mean, I know, you know, last week when I was playing Chutes and Ladders at home and, oh my God, you know, it just came up and, you know, we rolled double candy sticks and, oh, I just didn't know what to do with myself.
You know what, though, Pat, though? It's funny that you say that because when I would play games with my kids when they were young, I really had a hard time separating that competitive nature from the fact that, hey, I'm a parent, I should let my child win. And so
I have never had that problem with playing with my nieces or nephews.
You know, but it's different when it's your own kid. But what I had to do,
you want to crush them?
So Chris's house is like Cobra Kai. There shall be no mercy in this dojo. Yeah.
Sweep the leg, Johnny.
I'm probably on the cusp of that. Because my son's only 3 years old at the moment, and we're not really to the point where we're playing board games together. So it'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
It honestly, it was a problem that I had. And what I ended up doing, actually, when it came to the situation with my kids, I locked myself into a mode of play. So if we were playing a card game, say, like Go Fish or something, I always did my cards from lowest to highest all the time. Even if I knew that they had just asked me a card that I had drawn or something like that, and I could ask and take it away, if it wasn't the next number, I wouldn't do it. So then that way, at least, I was essentially restricting myself from intentionally winning. Same thing when we play Battleship. I always follow the same attack pattern because, you know, my kids are just, they just guess all over the place and they don't really care, you know?
Yep.
But you do, it's sometimes very difficult to separate that competitive nature from the friend nature that you're with.
I guess it's not a problem for me. I don't know if I have a martyr complex or what it is, but it's not really been a problem for me. For example,
well, if it's not a problem, why didn't you ally with me, you damn it?
Because you'll stab me in the back.
No,
Wayne
I wouldn't
won't. That's the difference. Because Wayne's not a douche. It's plain and simple.
Damn, I really hope that.
But you know, for example,
like, you know, Chutes and Ladders instead of diplomacy. But I see we're pulling it back.
Recently,
every time I get out, you pull me back in.
Recently, I was playing a game of Mario Party with my family, and my mom was playing. She's not
game.
A video gamer. I know, but she's not a video gamer. And we were playing one of the mini games, and you're supposed to climb a ladder or something. I don't remember what the deal was. I was close to the top, and she was right below me, and I intentionally let something happen to screw my character up so she would win. Yeah, I mean, this is a reverse thing of a child letting the parent win. But it's just because, you know, I knew that it would be more fun for her to feel like she was participating than just for me to just take off the gloves and just beat her ass just because I can.
My wife has caught me letting her win games before. Because I run into the problem, and I've said this many times before. You know, my wife, love her dearly. She is a sore loser and a poor winner. So I have to decide in each case, what do I want to deal with? The gloating over the winning or the being upset over the losing? And, you know, I'll take the gloating over it most times. But if I actually let her win something, she usually can tell it. And that backfires every time.
Well, let me give you a simple tip, though, and by you, I mean you, Wayne, I mean anybody in general. If you want somebody to play a game more than once, let them win the first time they play it.
Let the Wookiee win.
If you take someone and you're trying to convince them that from this point forward, they ought to play more whatever with you, and then you just beat their ass like they owe you money the very first time out.
Beat them like a rented mule.
Yeah, that is probably not going to win them back. Going back to role-playing games, even in a non-competitive setting, this can still come up.
Absolutely.
Because For example, let's say in a role-playing game and there are two characters having a perfectly in-character personality clash, and one of them does something not even to kill, but just to screw over the other. Or let's say it's even between a player and the GM, there's a dispute over the rules, that the GM interprets the rules one way, the player feels like they're getting screwed, and all of a sudden those emotions start flaring up because, let's be honest, we do not have a good emotional perspective on our hobby. Want proof? D&D 3.5 blows. D&D 2 is much better.
Wow, even when Chad's not here.
Whatever irrationality you're preparing to put on our forums or blog, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, there is my proof in motion of what I'm talking about.
Right, you can just see, Blood of a DM is just warming up her fingers right now.
Yeah.
Cars are veering off the highway. Cats and dogs living together in harmony. Oh, it's chaos.
But you know, but it's true, because at the crux of it, you're still sitting around playing a fantasy-based game and having a good communal experience. It doesn't matter what framework you put around it, but we get attached to that, just like you say, and you get into disputes over the rule because the thing that you have emotional investment in, you're getting it perceived being hurt. As a natural response, you want to defend that thing.
You know, and it's even worse if you've gone into it, if you've had a bad day or if you've been stressed out, and then you go into a game. Whatever tension is coming up in the game is just compiling and compiling until the point of, if you have multiple people there, someone will explode.
We all can sit here and say, you know, it's just a game. But for a lot of people, that is their stress relief. That's where they cool off. That's where they blow off steam. That's where they come down. And if they leave one stressful situation, whether it's at home or at work, and they come and sit down, the mindset that I'm going to get stress relieved, and then it turns out to be exactly even a more stressful situation. Yeah, absolutely. Those emotions just boil over.
Well, and also, as much as we can sit here, as you said, Chris, and give the rational comment that it's just a game, that type of anger is not a rational thing. You're not being rational when you've hit that state of mind. I realize there are some people out there that start at an 11. But most people, they kind of work up that direction. Yeah. You know, they're a little annoyed, then they're agitated, then they're peeved, then they're pissed, then they're outraged, then they're screaming and yelling. There's this process of working up to that through which, one after another, your logical veneer gets shed and you just become more and more boiling emotion. I think we can all agree this is a terrible scenario. Nobody wins when you set out to have fun and it ends with somebody who's angry. Now, secondly, I think also we can say fairly what's probably beyond the scope of what we can deal with here is if you've got somebody in your group who just has a temper problem in general, this would get into an area we're really not trying to go into. I mean, if you've got somebody who needs help, do what you can to help them get help. Talk to a counselor about how to convince them they need help. I don't know. That's not within our scope of expertise. But let's say you are talking about otherwise generally reasonable people who are in a situation. Let's talk about two things. One, how do you keep things from getting escalated that way in the first place? And two, if without realizing it, you take that plunge, how do you de-escalate it?
I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, it all depends on what side of the screen you're on, you know, and knowing what your players are like and what their reactions are bound to be, you know, and it's unfortunate. But I mean, if you know that Jim on this side of the table, if you do something that's really going to screw his character, even though ultimately you as the GM know that eventually things are going to be just fine, but he's going to have a negative reaction and make the situation worse, you're kind of almost inclined to not have that happen to him. And that's kind of one of the points I was going to make, is that related to this, is that if you do know your players real well and you know what their reactions might be as players as opposed to their characters, that can unfortunately color the way in which you might run a game, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think it's good and bad depending on how far you go with it. I mean, adjusting your game a little bit to deal with somebody's personality quirks or emotions, I don't think is a bad thing. When it hits the point that you just can't do whole segments of the game, you can't let this one guy take 5 hit points of damage because he's going to flip the table and storm out of the room, then, okay, yeah, you cannot let that type of thing control your game. And so I think it's kind of a very fine line there, but I absolutely do agree with what you're saying, at least in principle, that if this is starting to dictate what occurs in the game, or if people are having to tiptoe around certain aspects of the game, then yeah, this is definitely going too far.
I think the big key is actually knowing when this is happening, because sometimes it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the one thing that I know it gets harped on a lot, but it's communication. If you talk about it afterwards, if you talk about it when it happens, if you don't ignore it the first time you have that blow up, then you kind of learn what was it that set it off, and you learn the keys of what to look for. Because, I mean, we've even had this within our own group where we've come in stressed. We had a stressful session. Everything didn't go well this one time. And at the end, we had a blow up and we all went our separate ways. We came back and we never had anything like that happen again. Because it's one of those things where you have to also understand, occasionally, this just sometimes happens.
Yeah.
And
BS happens.
Maybe there's nothing more to it. Maybe it was really the stress that added up. Yes, the signs had to have been there. The signs had to have been missed. But it doesn't have to be more than a one-time thing.
You know, Wayne, at the risk of getting a little bit too hippie, I think you were absolutely right with what you said, the loss of communication.
Yeah, and I would say trust goes right along with that.
Well, and they say it's human nature that, was it 3 words or 3 seconds? It's 3-something into a sentence is typically how long before you're formulating a reply. And it's that decision to slow down, to listen before you speak. And when you do speak, I hate this sort of fire and forget mentality that people have sometimes with what they say of, I'm going to tell it to you, and if you can't handle it, that's your problem. No, that's sociopathic behavior is what that is. If you say something and have no concern for how it's going to affect somebody else, once again, I'm not talking about an unreasonable individual. Sometimes an unreasonable individual, even stating it in the nicest of ways, they're not going to handle. But if you're talking about 2 reasonable adults, yeah, you are responsible for what comes out of your mouth. I'm sorry, but it's just the truth. And when you're getting ready to communicate, stop and think about something, which is not just what am I trying to say, but how is this person going to receive that? Is there a way I can phrase it that is going to come across better? Are there certain phrases I know tend to piss them off? There's all kinds of strategies. I mean, just Google good communication techniques, and I'm sure you get a lot of crap, but find some reputable sources. There's a lot of great resources out there on how to communicate correctly, but the real rub here is the fact that it has to happen on both sides. What you can decide as an individual is not to escalate a situation, but you cannot make the person on the other side de-escalate or be as calm or as interested in communication as you are. I think something that goes hand in hand with this is the good old cost-benefit analysis, the CBA, of realizing, you know what, it's better for my character to take the stupid broadsword hit than it is to spend the next 30 minutes screaming, yelling, and throwing rules books at each other. It's just not worth it. I mean, wrecking everyone's night of fun over something this stupid just plain is not worth it.
I agree. And I think, too, depending upon how long you've been together as a group, too, there's a trust factor, too, where if you do find yourself in a hairy situation and getting stressed out by what's going on, thinking that you're just getting, you know, completely humped by the GM, you know, realizing that there's got to be some purpose to this, and I've game with this guy for a while. I know he's not just putting us through the ringer because he can. There's got to be, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel coming somewhere. You know, he's just giving us a challenge as opposed to trying to, you know, just beat us into the dirt.
This just brought this to mind because you're talking about stress relief from the player's aspect.
Right.
Players get together and they do this to relieve their stress. What about on the flip side? Do you ever, as a GM, you just say, you know, for you, it's a stress relief, and I want to beat up on the players a little bit this week?
No. Not me personally, no.
No,
because
me neither.
I mean, look, I've made the simple realization. I'm a firm believer in self-defense and standing up for yourself and having respect for yourself and that kind of stuff. But I cannot think of a single time in my life or anyone else's where you come in stressed out and unprecipitated conflict helps the situation. Where I'm already upset because I don't know what happened. Okay, I had a difficulty at work. I got in a fight with Carla. I don't know what. Some guy tried to run me off the road on the highway, whatever the issue is. And I'm going to come in and I'm going to do the TPK and get you guys screaming and yelling at me. And damn, if that's not my verbal Valium, then what is? I mean, really?
Yeah, but that's a knowing thing. I mean, I was wondering kind of the same question. If you've ever had the situation where you're going through the entire game and somebody keeps doing something that's just so annoying that without even meaning to, you subconsciously find yourself either lashing out at them or throwing consequences.
Oh, have I spanked my players? Hell yes.
Hell yeah, I'd do that. You bet. Absolutely. There's been many times where I've had a particular player just pull some amazing rule screw out of the book. And I just kind of stare, look at the guy and like, are you fucking kidding me? But, you know, but at the same time, all right, fine, I'll give it to you. But when I get the chance and I end up rolling damage on the guy, hell yes, I'm going to give him more damage. Am I going to kill him just because of that? Absolutely not. But yeah, you like Dan said, yeah, of course you spank your players. Absolutely. Yeah,
but we've moved beyond taking out your stress on them to the players are abusing the rule system and you're responding to an abuse.
Oh, not even the rule system, just something around the table.
Oh,
out of character comments.
Sure, even that too. Yeah. I had a guy who was playing what was supposed to be a priest. I want to say it was a D&D. It was a fantasy game. I think it was a D&D game. This was years ago. But he was not playing the combat cleric. Okay, he was supposed to be playing more like the man of the cloth. And this guy would just resort to violence for anything. And so finally, I put him in a situation because he had written in his background, because this guy always wrote a background like this, where his parents were killed by XYZ, but he had some younger sibling that he was super protective of. He wrote every one of his characters like this. And so partway through the game, they're trying to chase the big bad, and the big bad makes a getaway somewhere, but there is some little imp-like creature that's got the MacGuffin. And he chases this little imp-like creature down into a recess into the ground, into a cave, up to a cliff edge within this cave where there was this underground river way down below. I'm talking like sharp rocks, fall of death. And he runs up, grabs a MacGuffin and pushes it over the edge. And as it's falling, the big bad drops the illusion. It's his little sister.
Oh, wow. God. That's evil.
He didn't pull that shit. Twice.
Oh, man.
After that, he settled right down. But that wasn't stress. I was perfectly calm. I was totally cool
at the time. Risk of getting further into gaming story, how did he react to that?
Exactly how I wanted. His character calmed right down and acted like a man of the cloth from that point forward.
Wow.
Wow.
So he answered my question there.
Yeah.
That you know, like you said, that was my sort of my question.
But it was never a stress reliever. I mean, it's never like, man, I'm pissed off because I got a ticket on the way over here, so I'm going to have some big bad guy sever the arms off of Pat's character.
Well, and I didn't mean to that extreme. I just mean, oh, well, let's get into a battle. We'll blow off some steam and yeah, my thugs will be a little bit more resilient than they normally are. And they'll punch them around a little bit longer, but they're still going to win. But by God, that was a little bit fun for me because my paper men didn't just die immediately like that.
No, you know what? I know what you're getting at, Pat. And really, for me, when it comes to that kind of situation, as a stress reliever in that fashion, for me, what it is when I'm getting good role-playing-based feedback to what I'm throwing at them story-wise. If I'm throwing them a good situation and I see them as players getting into what's going on, that for me works as my stress reliever on my side of the screen as, you know, going in and killing a shitload of orcs goes for the player's side of things when they just want to sit down and kill something because they've had a stressful day. For me, it's the role-playing feedback that I get back that scratches that itch.
Yeah, and I'm sure everyone's different in this regard, but I'm with Chris on this one. In that, if I'm stressed out, what it will tend to affect is my desire to GM, not the way I GM.
Okay. Yeah, I would imagine the mood you bring to the table, more than anything, sets the beginning of the game.
If I'm a player, it's the other way around. If I'm a player and I'm stressed out, I'm not in the mood for the GM's crap. If, like, I get some sense that we're not having a real plot, he's just obfuscating or whatever, just throwing crap in my way to drag out the game, I quickly lose patience for it, start to get very agitated, at which point, usually, I'm not the type to have outbursts. I mean, I don't tend to scream, yell, cuss, and throw things. I just get quiet and drop out of the game. I just start daydreaming or whatever and just kind of drop out of the game. But man, I think the biggest thing you've got to do here is just learn self-control, learn communication, and just stop these problems before they start. Because once it's reached that level, yeah, you can email each other, apologize, be cool about it, make up for it. And that's certainly a good thing. Great moment there. You know, friendships that can survive problems are good friendships. Friendships that can't survive problems weren't friendships anyway. But if
you're going to be second guessing the person next time, though.
But you know what? It's better off if you can keep it from happening in the first place by leaving it at the door. Now, a side tangent I want to go off on, and I got to be careful how I phrase this, because I think a lot of people are going to overhear what I'm saying. They're going to think I'm saying something.
Then why are
I'm not
you even trying?
I know, but that's part of doing the show. Humans, like most animals, our play tends to mimic our personalities and our inner impulses. But it also tends to teach us life skills and all kinds of other things like that. But our play tends to be a reflection of something about ourselves. We talked about last episode how characters we create in some cases may be an ideal of yourself, or at any rate, are your interpretation of a certain personality archetype or a certain situation. In the same way, is the guy who stabs you in the back all the time in diplomacy, is that a sign this person maybe does have some kind of ethical deficiency?
Are you saying something about me?
I am.
I was going to say, I don't even think that's the case. I think sometimes people feel so beat down in their own life that they become like that in a game.
As a because way that's reasserting power?
Yes, because in their own life, they don't feel like they have any power.
Right.
They're not a morally deficient person. It's a...
Well, that's why I want to be careful.
They're trying to let this out.
Yeah, I want to be careful how this gets interpreted, because I'm not implying that if you role-played something, that means that's what you're really like. That's obviously an absurdity. Nor am I implying that if you play a game and you're in it to win it, that means in truth you're an evil son of a bitch. That's not what I'm saying. I am just raising a purely theoretical question of if somebody has a recurring trait in their characters, or a recurring behavior, let's even say in Chutes and Ladders, where they're a little too aggressive, they're a little too backstabby, at that point, does that start to clue you in that maybe there's something deeper going on here? I think it does.
Now,
some
if it's
of the
Chutes
time,
and Ladders with their kid, maybe you've got a point there. I'll concede that.
It's true.
I don't know. It's possible, but it's to what degree that exists. You're kind of poking fun at me with the whole thing with diplomacy because, yeah, I did break an alliance and blah, blah, blah. But does that mean that, you know, if you and I suddenly found our backs against the wall and then, you know, the numbers were against us, which sides, you know, odds are, no, I would not. It goes along hand in hand with how well you know that person. Do you know they just like to play a game and have some fun and do things that they can do in a game that they would never do in real life? Then that might be as far as a lot of people take it. For some people, is there something a bit more sinister going on? Yeah, sure. I mean, there's always, you know, an apple with a dent in it in the bag. So, sure, why not?
Yeah, sometimes the play is a warning sign. But yes, I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Chris, that has to be taken very carefully. And that's why I wanted to couch it in a certain way of saying, look, don't overhear me, because I am not trying to say that every time someone does something sinister or aggressive in a game, that therefore means they're an evil person. That's not what I'm saying. But just that if I start to see patterns that are a little bit too well rehearsed, sometimes that does start to kind of make me wonder if there's something else going on here. Anyway, let's talk about something completely different here. This is actually a subject that several people in our forums asked us to talk about. And incidentally, if there's something that you want to hear us talk about on the show, don't hesitate to go on to the forums at feartheboot.com. We've got a suggestion thread out there you can drop stuff in, or send an email to any of us. Chad, Dan, Pat, Wayne,
yeah.
John, Chris at feartheboot.com.
Pat and I are thinking about doing a Literotica episode.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I've got a few
ideas. So, Pat, you were a librarian. Well, who was Chris in that story?
He was the young college boy that had many, many books overdue.
I had $69 in book fines.
Yes, he did.
So I just have to know one thing. Was one of you female, or were you both?
I was Pat
and Chris. Oh, you were female.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what, though? The funny thing was is that I didn't completely pick up on Pat being female until about 6 or 7 texts into the whole thing. So,
are you serious?
Yeah.
And it didn't matter to him.
And what's funny is
that's when once you figure out that I was playing a female instead of a guy,
that's when I got not interested.
Okay. Yet.
All right. Anyway.
Then I felt ashamed. And then I was interested again.
If there's something you're interested in hearing about that's not that stupid, then send an email to any of us at feartheboot.com.
You know what? We're going to get a lot of comments about that. People are going to want to hear about that.
Goodness. We're going to be apologizing to Hansel the whole time.
There is something that people ask to hear about, which is timely, not just because Fear the Con's coming up, but beyond Fear the Con, we are entering into the convention season in general. Part of the reason we picked Fear the Con being in March is because of the fact that it guarantees we're not competing with the other cons or hitting people at the end of the year when they're broke from the cons and about to be even more broke from Christmas and property tax. Mm. And so that's why we put Fear the Con in March. But we are headed in from Fear the Con into Gen Con and Origins and Dragon Con and whatever other bazillion cons there are out there. And so a couple people asked us to talk about going to a convention, not running a convention, but the best practices for attending a convention, because there are a surprising number of people in the gaming community who have not gone to a convention before, or have and maybe had a disastrous time of doing so. And so we wanted to talk about some of the different aspects of preparing for and attending a convention. Now, Pat and Wayne, you guys have limited con experience, and Wayne, you had some questions. I've been to a bunch of cons. Chris existed before the English word for con did. So, Chris, do you want to start this off, or do you want me to?
I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a shot for title here. I guess if you're looking at the most basic of it, when it comes to packing to go, you got to make sure that, and a lot of it depends on how you're getting there. If you're driving, you know, is one thing, but if you're flying, that's a completely different thing. I've never had to go to a con where I've had to fly to get there.
These are all separate issues. You want to talk about packing for the con, getting to the con?
Because, well, it's related because when it comes to packing, the point here is that you've got to allow for space to bring the stuff that you're going to purchase there, if there are things to purchase, back. That's where the whole driving versus flying thing comes in, especially now with getting charged with second bags and what. I mean, obviously, if you're going to fly to this con, you're either going to have to find some way to ship what you purchase back, or, you know, pay that extra bag fee, or leave, you know, or bring an extra bag so you can pack that stuff in there. A car, obviously, you have a bit more flexibility depending upon how many people traveled with you and what kind of space situation you have in there. But when you pack, allow for space to bring that stuff back, because even if you don't buy anything, odds are you're going to get some free stuff to take back with you. So, you know, think of the journey home, what space you might need. And that could come to, you know, devising a shopping list beforehand for things that you know you want to get if some game is debuting at that con or whatever, or if that something special is going to be there. You know, and then plan for just a little bit extra on top of that. A lot of it has to do with your budget and how much spending money you do plan on spending.
Okay, let's start with that then. How to pack for the con is the subject you picked. And that was one of the items I have on my list. And I absolutely agree, is always leave extra room in your luggage. I have done this at more cons than I care to count, more trips than I care to count of any kind, where I will pack a suitcase perfectly full. It closes, it seals, it passes or maybe passes the weight limit thing on the at the airport, but then you get to the convention, you get some handouts, you buy some stuff, and all of a sudden you have nowhere to put it. Chris is absolutely right. I think this deserves a lot of emphasis. Underpack. And by underpack, I don't mean leave stuff at home. I mean bring a suitcase or an empty suitcase, but make sure you have room for the stuff that you are bringing back.
That's a rule I have for all my vacations as well, because I run into the same thing. Whether the vacation be going to a con or going to a theme park or whatever, I have that same issue of you've got to have room for whatever you bring back.
If you do plan on going to, say, you know, the big one, going to Gen Con, this is even more true, because yes, you may go there and say, okay, I know I'm going to pick up this game, I know I'm going to pick up that game, and I might pick up these items here. Odds are you're going to go there and you're going to run into all these 50% off sales where they're blowing out all this old D20 merchandise, the stuff that you thought was cool when it first came out but never bought, but now suddenly it's 50% off and now you will buy it because it is that price. That happens. I mean, my goodness. The last two times I went to Gen Con, I would look through those 50% off and I found like four or five games. I just thought, man, I could totally buy this right now. And I knew odds are I would never use it. But it was like,
crap, you don't even know exists.
Yeah.
I went to a convention intending to buy nothing and came home with one of the television show prop phasers from Star Trek, the original series. I mean, just crap that you don't even know may be available for sale there. But I think along those lines, a thought that plays right into that, it's something you have to keep in mind, is that at a convention, you are generally speaking operating away from any kind of a home base. If you're staying in a hotel, you're going to wake up in the morning, depart that hotel, and whether it's down the street, down the block, across town, or even just down the stairs, you're going down to that con, you are going to spend a lot of time away from that room. And so there are a couple things that I think are important to do. One is have some kind of a bag for keeping stuff in. Could be stuff you buy, could be stuff you brought, like dice, that is, once again, has a little bit of extra empty space for things you pick up and is comfortable to carry around for long periods of time.
I can actually speak to this, Dan, because I made the rookie mistake, I guess, as it will, at Gen Con last year. I got there and I did not have any sort of a bag. I just didn't even think about that being the case. Luckily, one of the guys that I went with had a messenger bag, and so I was able to use that. And I will say this year, I'm going to take a backpack that I've got at home that's fairly comfortable wear, because, and this is just for me, you people may love them. I hate messenger bags. I hate that thing, because the problem with it is it's on one shoulder.
Yes.
And you carry that thing around, you carry 20 pounds or whatever of crap for 12 hours a day on one shoulder, you're in serious pain. Now, if you're going to a small con where you're not going to be all over the place, it's a little bit different. But like a Gen Con, expect to walk at least about 5 miles every day.
And he's not joking.
So, or more.
He's not joking.
You could be going
all
more.
All of this is turning into a question that I have, that I've had for actually a long time here, and that's, when you're at one of these cons, one of these huge cons where you're walking around carrying these bags all day, what are you actually doing if you're not gaming? Because I hear about there's the vendor room, there's stuff to do there, but I always want my big question, because that that's going to help you decide what you pack and what you carry, is what is there to do?
And it depends on your personality.
Depends on your personality.
Like, I didn't play a game at Gen Con. No, I'm sorry, I take that. I did not play many games at Gen Con, but I had a great time. I'm a people watcher, so I'll wander around. I looked at people in their costumes and the people doing this, that, and the other. Just took
when I hear about Gen Con, I envision people wandering around. If people aren't gaming, I just envision people wandering around the streets or wandering around like the store area. I'm thinking, how can that last 12 hours?
Well, you'd be surprised.
Hold on. You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
At the risk of playing to my stereotype, hold on. We'll come back to that. Because how to plan your con and what you're doing at the con, I've got as a whole separate topic. But along those lines, Wayne, let me real briefly just say that you would be surprised how much time you will spend walking around. And even if you're gaming, the simple fact of the matter is, how long does a game last? 2 hours, maybe 4 hours, depending on the game. And then you're up and on the move again. And in the middle, you are still stuck only with whatever's on your body. You better have a comfortable way of transporting that. As Pat said, at Gen Con in particular, now Fear the Con, this may not be much of an issue because it occurs in one building. A lot of conventions will. But you go to something monstrous like Gen Con, which takes up multiple city blocks, you will be doing so much walking. The first year I went to Gen Con and stayed, we won't count the 20-minute cameo we made several years ago, but the first time I went to Gen Con and stayed, I wore a pair of flip-flops or sandals, or I don't remember what they were, but some kind of nice little summer shoes.
Oh my gosh.
By about halfway through the first day, I had just torn the crap out of my feet.
Yeah.
Wear something that is comfortable to walk in for long distances, because you will be walking long distances. Wear tennis shoes, wear hiking boots. I don't care what your fashion is, but don't pick something that's nice and comfy when you're sitting out on your porch, because you're not sitting out on your porch.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing I was going to say along with the bag, because it may sound silly to say that, but we're not kidding. Gen Con, you're walking probably a minimum of 5 miles a day, and that's a long way, and that's a lot of walking. So, and maybe you need to go get some. Maybe you really don't have a pair of shoes that are really comfortable for that amount of walking. So that's, you know, definitely a thing to invest in.
I understand,
so
we'll get back to it later when he's talking about planning it out. But that's just, when I hear statements like that, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
They're walking 5 miles. What are you walking to? How does this go across?
Well, it's like you say.
Give you an example. And we'll use Gen Con again just because of the size. If you finish an event and you realize, oh, hey, okay, I'm hungry. And you also at this point have realized the cheapest food that you can get is at the food court. That's roughly 6 blocks away. So there and back is 1 mile already. You've already walked 1 mile to go get, half a mile to go get lunch, half a mile to go back after you've eaten. So you've already walked 1 mile, and it's only been, you know, maybe about an hour and a half. Now you've got to go to your next event. Oh, wait, maybe you might have to go back to your hotel. Let's add another 4 or 5 blocks on top of that. You know, so suddenly you've already racked up about a mile and a half. You know, and it's only been a couple of hours. And then the hall itself takes up at least 2 blocks, if not more. And the exhibitors hall is easily at least a block, not a little bit longer. Just it's that large.
And
it's not just a block as in the sense of walking from point A to point B on the sidewalk. There's multiple aisles and alleyways that you walk around in there. So you're easily walking a good mile within the confines of the exhibitors hall itself.
Yeah,
and
that is carpeted. I walked miles just in the exhibitor hall over the 3 days, because I was wandering there most of the time. So I spent miles just in there. But yeah, he's like, basically, you're going to count on every single meal that you eat at Gen Con is probably going to involve about a mile walk.
Clothing, I would recommend bringing stuff that's fairly adaptable, because let's take a look at the climate. Depending on where you're going, it may be cold there at day, but then you're sitting in a hot as hell gaming hall packed with gamers. You know, what do you wear for that? And so I would make sure that whatever clothing you're bringing, make sure you know the climate you're going to. And particularly if it's a cold climate outside, but going to be warmer indoors, you may want to be sure that, okay, maybe I'm going to wear jeans, but I'm going to stick to thinner t-shirts. And then I'll just have a coat I can take off, put on the back of the chair. Think about the place you're going, just like this was any other kind of vacation. You don't go to Florida dressed like an Eskimo. You don't go to Alaska dressed like it's Florida. And it's the same thing with a convention.
You know, that's one of the biggest things I failed at going to some of these events and like comic book conventions and things like that, is I go in, knowing how cold it is outside. And before long, I'm walking around with my coat in my arm, and my arm's getting heavy from it, or my sweatshirt's in my arm, and my arm's getting heavy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to carry this around all day, but there's nothing I can do with it.
Cargo shorts at Gen Con were like the pants of choice last year. As I easily 60% of the attendees had cargo shorts on. It was amazing.
You son of a bitch.
Did I just steal that from you?
Right out of my mouth again.
I am so sorry.
I was going to say, cargo. You got to go with the cargo shorts.
It's cargo shorts or cargo pants, because it's a great place to put your dice.
Exactly.
And all kinds. I guess also, and this depends on what you're there for, but like in our case, by the end of the con, I have a stack of business cards.
Mm-hmm.
And what's unfortunate is most of them I don't really ever get a chance to follow up with, and probably most I give a card to don't follow up with me. But you know what, you feel it's cargo shorts are a great way of doing that. It's a great way for me to carry around cards and out to people, or to keep the cards that I get. Even if you're not there for business cards or there on any kind of business at all, it's still an issue. It's a great place to put your dice. If somebody gives you a little piece of swag, it's a great place to put that.
One more thing I'll add to the packing list.
Oh, I've got a bunch more, but go ahead.
Snacks. Because, yeah, you are going to eat your breakfast or whatever in the morning. You definitely going to have a lunch meal and a dinner meal. But, you know, in between, you might be doing two sessions right in a row. Those are 2 4-hour sessions with maybe a 15-minute break in between. And regardless, really, of the con size, you might not have time to go anywhere. Say, if it's a smaller con, yep, you might be able to find a nearby vending machine, but you might not. So pack some snacks with you. And this is also what cargo shorts can be very good for, because the pockets will hold them really nice. And not to get back to the whole gamer health thing, but make it something that's a little bit higher in protein, because that takes a little bit longer to digest and will make you feel full for a little bit longer, rather than some sort of high carb type snack like a bag of chips or something like that, a package of nuts or some.
Where do your Carmelitas fall on this list?
Carmelitas, that's a luxury snack that you give yourself at the end of the day.
And also, along with snacks, a water bottle. You know, just a bottle of water is as simple as that, because you're not always maybe going to be around where drinks are.
And in fact, that's one of the items I got here to talk about, is how to get out of a con without getting sick. We'll come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
But drinking plenty of water is on that list.
Yeah, definitely.
Other things, let's check these off real quick, that I came up with while thinking about this. One is a pre-printed map to and from any major locations nearby you're interested in. Certainly a map at least between your hotel and the con center. If there's any local attractions you want to go to, or for example, through like a podcast like this, you know, we're meeting up at a particular restaurant, know where that stuff is, have a map with the local area in general. If you can and own one, bring a GPS device. That'll make your life even easier still. Obviously, it's not going to find room 214 for you, but it will at least help you find, for example, a restaurant. Printed confirmations for your hotel, con events, plane ticket, car rental, etc. If you paid money to reserve anything, print out that little confirmation ticket and bring it with you. 99% of the time, you will not need it. That 1% of the time, you will thank me for having it.
The only other thing I would add to that list, and this is an unusual item, but you just never know, honestly, a deck of cards, a deck of playing cards. I've seen it come in handy many times, and it's not just a thing where it's like, oh, it's something to do in between. At the gaming table, it's amazing how handy a deck of cards will come in.
For what?
I'll give you a perfect example. One time we, this was actually at my first Gen Con I went to. I was playing a Battletech event with one of my buddies that we came down with, and the guy who was running the event, he forgot to bring his playing cards because he was using them as part of the game. And he goes, you know, I'm really sorry, guys, I forgot cards. So we're gonna do this thing instead. And my friend had brought a deck of playing cards, and he whipped them out, and he's like, here, go ahead, let's just use these. And that, of course, then really smoothed things out for the event. It's one of those items that they're not really heavy to bring around, and you know, you just never know when stuff like that comes up. And gaming conventions are different animals, and it's just one of those good utility items. It's like bringing a couple extra D6 because you just never know. A
couple other items I have on here: at least one more set of clothing than you think you'll need. The reason being, bad things happen. Somebody spills something on you. You even just go out and just sweat a lot during the day and are getting pretty stinky and want to change your clothes. Bring one more set of clothing than you'll think you'll need. If you are prone to any kinds of medical problems, be sure to bring stuff for that. That could be prescriptions. That could even be over-the-counter stuff. Look, you're going to a strange place. You know what? The sushi may not have been quite as well prepared as you'd hoped, and it'd be nice to have a little bit of Imodium on you or something. I don't know.
Ibuprofen and acetaminophen in general are good, because if you end up walking a lot, some anti-inflammatories or just regular painkillers are going to be wonders for your calves.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
cash, and by cash, I mean the real green stuff. Having a credit card on you is nice, and certainly if you're carrying a large amount of cash, you need to take proper security precautions. But I do recommend bringing some amount of real green cash. It's useful for tipping people. It's useful for paying for small items. Some places won't take a credit card. And so you might want to bring, if you can afford it, some amount of stuff in real money. Also, at some of these cons, because of the flood of people, and this is occurring on a weekend, I've seen the ATMs go empty. And so if you need cash, you may or may not be able to get it on a moment's notice. Last item I have, and this is a category of items, is be sure that you bring everything you use in your day in general. Your toiletries, your clothing, your prescriptions. Easy way I have found to make sure you got everything, and this is a trick I learned on business trips. And I developed this habit after going on one business trip and getting there and realizing I'd forgotten to pack underwear. The trick is this. Pantomime your day. Pretend you have just woken up in the morning. What do? I go into the bathroom and I brush my teeth. Okay, what does that require? Take a pencil and paper. Write it down. Okay, what do I do after that? I take a shower. What does that require? Write that down. I'm done at the end of the day. I'm going to bed. What is my going to bed procedure? I go through these things. Blah, blah, blah. Write all that crap down.
Lotion and tissues.
Make that... Thank you, Chris. We can always count on you. Make about that a checklist of things to bring.
And see, Dan, I just thought that was just during your commando period, so it's not that you forgot to take underwear.
Coming back with your physical and mental health intact, Chris, I'm going to give you my list. I'm curious what you have to add to this. But one of the things a lot of people complain about when they come back from something like Gen Con is what they call con crud. And what they're describing is more, you go to a convention, people there have mixed hygiene. It's not as bad as the stereotype might be, but it does happen. Or even if it's not a hygiene issue, it's just somebody came there, they're carrying a cold they picked up from their kids, and now they're in a crowd of people spreading it around. You shake their hand, you do whatever, you end up possibly catching that stuff. So here are a couple things I came up with that will help you keep your health intact from a con. And I could say this with some authority because while I do have a good immune system, I've also never gotten sick once at a convention. Number one, and this is the one that a lot of people are not going to want to hear, is sleep.
Yeah.
I realize with the round-the-clock party going on and all that stuff, there's a convention saying of 3-2-1, 3 hours of sleep, 2 meals, and 1 shower every day. Mm-hmm. Don't do 3-2-1. That's really not healthy.
Well, you're right.
If you can, do like 7-3-1 or 7-3-2.
I think that's the biggest component of what you're talking about, is that the biggest thing is that people just literally, they wear themselves out. You run yourself ragged.
Bingo.
And that weakens your immune system.
Bingo. And I do not know any way of proving this, but I just have to think somewhere deep in my gut that the reason so many people get sick at cons is not con crud. It's they mess up their own immune systems by running themselves ragged.
Yeah.
They don't sleep enough. Number two, eat well.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Just because you're at a con doesn't mean you have to eat like crap.
That's not that hard. It's easy to eat like crap, but it's not that hard to eat decent.
Number three.
And all of these are just general life stuff as well. I mean, anytime you've been in a situation where you haven't eaten right, and where let's say you're working, 18-hour days for a couple of weeks, you get sick after it. I know I do. You just get run down and sick.
Number three, drink lots and lots of water. This is not only important because of the fact that, look, you're sitting at a gaming table. There's soda all over the place. There may be beer or whatever. You're not thinking about getting up to go get a drink of water, but then on top of that, you're staying up late hours, you're walking around with maybe hot climates or inside hot rooms, you're really exerting yourself. You need to stay hydrated, and it's going to take more water than usual. I don't mean to be graphic, but there's a real simple way to tell. Look at how often you have to pee and what color your pee is. If it's a dark color, you're not getting enough water. Yep. You want it to be as close to clear as you can possibly get it. Drink lots and lots of water. If you do have a really weak immune system, even normally, you may want to consider bringing a hand sanitizer and using it every so often. I personally am not a big fan of hand sanitizers. I shake people's hands and I don't end up getting sick, but to each their own. It may be something you want to consider.
There's also some of the over-the-counter things that help with colds.
Vitamin C pills.
Vitamin C is the simple one. The Zicams. The
emergencies.
That kind of a thing. Yeah. But they're all just sort of a vitamin C derivative.
Last one I have, unless Chris has anything to add, is know your limits both socially and physically. Look, it's a gaming con. I understand that you just want to keep the party going. But at some point, make the decision that, look, I'm at my limit. It's time to stop. It's time to go back to the room, get a few hours of sleep, get a real meal in me, go drink several glasses of water and try and rehydrate myself, whatever.
One thing I would add to that, and then I'm actually going to counter your original point. First of all, I agree with you 1,000% on the water thing. Absolutely. Drink much more water than you ever think you would need to have because, yeah, it's just all that's going to do end up benefiting you. And you're going to sweat a lot of that out anyway, especially if you're at a big con and you're doing a lot of walking around. Mental state is really what I would say is another component there that you may not think about. When you go to the con, you know, go there and essentially mentally prep yourself for what you're going to be doing for the next few days. You know you're going to be out of your routine. You probably will be up later than you want and up earlier than you want than you would normally be. You're going to be probably physically exerting yourself a bit more than you might normally be used to. You're going to be doing a lot of things that you just don't do. Mentally prep yourself for doing that, and that can actually help you really deal with a lot of things better, deal with the exhaustion better. It'll help your mood in a certain way to make you a bit more tolerant of other people when your fuse is getting short. And in a counterpoint to the sleep, while I do agree in general, obviously, get as much sleep as you possibly can. When I go to a con, I usually sleep very little. I mean, I'm usually around the 5 hours of sleep or so. But the reason why I do that is because I go there with the mentality that, hey, I'm here to get as much out of this convention as I absolutely possibly can. So to counteract some of that, take some time during the day to take, not necessarily power naps, although at larger cons, you will see people sleeping in the hallways, but take some time to give yourself 20 or 30 minute breaks where you just sit back on a bench, maybe away from people, maybe close your eyes a little bit and just rest and let yourself relax for a little bit. And that can do, it's essentially, it could be a 20-minute power nap without necessarily taking a nap if you don't want to. But it does allow you to do some rejuvenation to yourself so you can get back up and get going again. And just allow yourself those 20 to 30 minutes just to relax and get that bag off your shoulders. Let your arm, you know, let your shoulders rest, let your back muscles rest a little bit. And then you can get back up and go at it. But really, otherwise, a list, I can pretty much agree with most everything you said.
I do realize, broadly speaking, there are two kinds of vacationers, those that go someplace to do everything and those that go someplace to do nothing. And I am probably of the latter type, while people like Chad and Chris are of the former type.
I am the former as well.
But having said that, I will agree what Chris gave is a good middle ground. Actually, Chris, you tell me you get 5 hours of sleep is anecdotally more than a lot of people tell me they get.
Yeah.
And so even that's probably a step up, but I'm still going to stay in the camp of, look, if you can get a full night's sleep.
Oh, absolutely.
I know for a lot of people, this is their weekend where they want to stay up all night and then bounce out of bed in the morning for an 8 a.m. game. If that's the case, I know you're going to do it anyway. So follow Chris's advice and at least try to get some power naps. Stay up on your vitamins, stay up on some protein, keep plenty of water in your system, and you'll probably be okay.
So you're both kind of hitting on something here that I'm wondering where that threshold is, and I hate using the word threshold because it always leads the wrong down the line, but is there a point where you've wandered around all this time, your feet are killing you, you were talking about taking pills, having Tylenol or things like that ready, you're possibly staying in rooms with other people. Does there come a point where everything you're doing to be able to afford this convention, to be able to wander around and to make sure you do everything outweighs the fun you're having at it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, isn't that a risk when you're planning it, that you're potentially trying so hard to do everything that you're not going to enjoy anything?
Phrase that way, no. Phrase the original way, yes. But here's the thing. Look, if you're planning this con out, let's go back to, let's talk about planning a convention. When you are looking at the list of stuff that's there to do, there are two things you've got to look at. One is what's available you're interested in, of course. But the second is, look, know yourself. I mean, goodness gracious, unless you're 10 years old, surely you know your limits. And you know that there's only so much I can do before I'm going to get sick of people. I'm going to get too tired of walking, whatever, and need to take a break. And one of the things here, as I talked about in my notes, planning for the convention, is I recommend signing up for conventions early. So let me back up and give that quick aside. Because the earlier you sign up, the better shot you have of making sure you get seated in the events you want to be in, you have access to the places you want to be, you have time to look over the schedule and really plan for it. But then as you're planning, I would just say know your limits. Yes, you can get a situation where, I guess to use a different analogy, your eyes are bigger than your stomach, except in this case, it's your eyes are bigger than your general physiology. And you can look around and there is stuff going on over multiple city blocks. There's a massive dealer room. When I go there, there's a number of people from various companies or other podcasts or even just friends I'm trying to catch up with. And yeah, you can definitely run yourself ragged. And I don't know what to say other than, look, just have the common sense to know when enough is enough and take some time for yourself. There were times at Gen Con, not last year, I didn't go last year, but 2 years ago, where I just was hitting my limits, and without anybody else, I just, on my own, went back to the hotel room and just sat there for about 30 minutes, just in the calm, quiet, had some water to drink, watched a little bit of TV news, because we didn't really have a lot of options on the TV in there. But, you know, just took it easy, sat on the couch, peed on Chris's pillow.
Well, that's what that was.
And, you know, then went back into the con. So, I mean, to answer your question, Wayne, yes. But if you're planning your day that way, that's a failure of your planning. I mean, that's...
You know, I don't know, because, see, it's, for me, even small cons, Fear the Con 2 was an example of this. You know, for me, it is a test of endurance. I'm more than willing to push myself to my absolute limits as far as I want to go when I'm at the con, because the after effects for me will always outweigh the pain I ended up putting myself through. So, like, for example, I Fear the Con 2 last year, and we'll pick a small con just for contrast sake here. We went out and watched a midnight premiere of Watchmen when it came out. So I'm up at least until 3 o'clock, had to get back up probably around 8 the next day. Yeah, okay, 5 hours of sleep, like I had mentioned before, but it was on a hotel bed that it wasn't necessarily, always not necessarily the most comfortable thing in the world. And then I got to go and I got to get back to the con and be on, because I'm running an event right away in the morning. And I'm flipping exhausted. But at the same time, I remembered, wait a second, you know, people traveled hundreds of miles to come and be at this event that I'm doing here. So if I'm not on my game, then I'm failing them and I'm cheating them out of their money they paid. And so I, you know, essentially had to make myself and push myself to go and put on a good event for them. So for me, it's always just constant test of endurance. You know, I guess it would be like, what, a gaming triathlon in a certain way, the way you're just, you're kind of doing it. And so I haven't experienced that threshold, Wayne. To me, it's always, you know, the fun I've had afterwards and the good feelings I had after attending a con after the fact always outweigh whatever hell I ended up putting myself through, whether it was my first Gen Con where I went camping an hour outside of town, or whether it was just Fear the Con last year when I stayed up really, really late.
You know, and I remember vacations where I've had that, where I've pushed myself to that limit. And when I think about it afterwards, I never remember the week afterwards that I just felt horrible. I remember the fun I had when I was there.
Well, see, I'm definitely on the other side of this, because for me, and maybe this is just personality or introversion, I need a certain amount of personal space to recharge. It will affect my fun if I push myself too hard. I mean, if I'm out on the constant party circuit, that will eventually affect the fun I'm having on the spot. Forget the recovery week thereafter. And I don't know, maybe this is why I don't get sick at cons, because I don't push myself.
And that could be.
I will tend to go off somewhere and just take it real easy. It's going to be interesting to see at Fear the Con 3. This is the first Fear the Con. I mean, not there's been a whole lot, but this is the first Fear the Con where I've had something in every slot. And I'm curious how even Fear the Con 3 will affect me having something in all 6 slots. Let's talk quickly here about picking events.
Man, you're just really on a limb there.
You
with
should
all that
see
slot
the
talk,
pained
Dan.
Look on Pat's face, Chris.
Oh, well, what, when Dan mentioned slots?
Yeah,
filling all
slots.
He's got something in every slot. And, oh,
all right. Pat, I am lockstep with you, brother. Yeah. I just didn't say anything for the sake of time, but I know.
We're ending up against time, but there's two other things here I think are worth talking about, are not big enough to make a topic on another show. So we'll try to hit them relatively quickly while doing them justice. Thing number one is picking the events you're going to attend. When you're looking at a convention, there is going to be an overwhelming amount of stuff that is available to do at any decent con. I mean, even at Fear the Con, well, some of the events that you may, the cherry events may be filled up or whatever, or may not be. There's going to be a lot of stuff to pick from. You go to Gen Con, it's even worse. The event booklet for Gen Con is the size of a mid-sized town's phone book. I mean, it's huge. And the best advice I can give you is this, is look, do some stuff that sounds good and familiar, but also don't hesitate to experiment. Because while you're at a convention, you're not committing to a gaming group, you're not committing to a campaign, you're committing to a couple hours with a bunch of guys you may never see again. Have some fun. If there's something in there that sounds totally off the wall, totally wacky, go for it. That's not to say you can't play some old favorites. You know, if there's a, you just love Battletech, or, and there's a Battletech campaign being run, or you just really love those D&D 4E dungeon crawls, or I'm just making crap up. Whatever it is, don't hesitate to do a little bit of both. Depending on the convention, there may also be panels there. There may be guest speakers. Look into that. There may be something getting shown in terms of a movie clip or a movie release or a small film. For example, when we were interviewing Matt Vansel, he talked about how his movies oftentimes get shown for the very first time at conventions. You know, look at all that stuff. Obviously, you're going to have to make some choices about what you want to do. And yes, obviously, every choice you make is a risk. You may pick an event and hate it for one reason or another, but oh well. You've wasted a couple hours, you go on to the next thing, you pick it up again. Don't be afraid to try some new stuff because it's the only way you'll learn about anything new out there.
The only thing I would add to that, and forgive me if you mentioned this, because I was actually, I grabbed last year's Gen Con book when you mentioned it, 290 pages. That's how big the program booklet for Gen Con is. But if you're at a larger convention, don't fill up every slot. Leave yourself time to explore, see, and just to kind of experience what's going on. Pat talked about how he's a people watcher. You know, at larger cons, hell, even at smaller cons, there are plenty of people and interesting personalities to watch, whether they're in costume or not. You see people gaming and doing things in ways in which you may never have done or experienced before, and it's fun to watch.
Well, and this is also something where Fear the Con's a little different than most cons, is we have planned a bunch of social events outside of the cons. But if you go to something like Gen Con, you're probably there from either Wednesday or Thursday until Sunday, which is the same time as everyone else. And as Chris said, you've got a set amount of time to do a lot of things. And I'll add on top of his comment about exploring, you also have socialization and things like that to do. So let's say, for example, let's just keep going with this podcast. If you're a listener's podcast, which obviously you are right now, then you're going out there. Maybe you want to meet up with us and our Toft bitches or something because we're going out for sushi. If you've got every slot blocked out, you won't be able to see the dealer room. You won't be able to walk around and talk to people. You won't be able to go out for sushi or drinks with the people that you meet there. So I will absolutely agree. Chris is right. At a smaller con like Fear the Con, particularly where we have social stuff planned outside the con, maybe you can fill every block. But at a big con with a lot of weird stuff going on and a lot of interesting stuff going on, yes, leave yourself some space. Finding a place to stay and getting down there. Talk about both of those real quick. I think they're both pretty straightforward ideas of, you know, reserve a room and make sure you have a way to get there you can afford. That's pretty straightforward. But let me talk about some of the stuff that may not be so straightforward. First off, particularly with hotels and bigger cons, reserve in advance. Otherwise, everything will be full. Secondly, be sure to do it through the room blocks offered because they're typically offered at a discount. In the case of Fear of the Con, we have a room block discount, which it's not huge. I mean, it'll save you a few bucks, but it's not huge. At Gen Con, the rooms are literally one third to one half of their original price. It is an unbelievable discount. And I'm talking about on rooms that are sometimes $350 a night. So you are saving a lot of money by going through their blocks and getting signed up early.
And I think, like you mentioned, I think the Gen Con rooms, the blocks, they sell out what, within the first day that they go up?
Big time.
So,
and even their site typically crashes while it's occurring. Another option is to stay somewhere not quite right at the con, but like in the suburbs nearby. For something like Fear the Con, obviously you're not going to do that. We're not filling up hotels, but you go to something like Gen Con, this is a problem. The only downside to this is you now have to figure out a way to and from your hotel to the convention center. And if the convention center has insufficient parking nearby, finding a place to drop your car could be a problem. Your other option of getting a taxi, obviously that's going to cost you some money. There might be a bus or some kind of mass transit system that takes you there. There may not be. Know what your options are and just plan all this stuff out well in advance. I cannot stress that enough. The more time you have, the better. Now, let's say you are really on a budget. The other way of doing this on the cheap is to share. A car trip down, even with the gas and stopping for lunch, and then once you get there, staying in a hotel, may be fairly expensive for one person, but if you can split this four ways, suddenly it's not so bad.
Yep.
Now, if you are coming from a place where you've got a bunch of buddies who are also into gaming, who are free at the same time, your answer is pretty obvious. You split the price with them. Sometimes it's hard to get the dipshits to commit, but presuming you can get them to commit in a reasonable amount of time and not spend half the time between the pre-reg and the con deciding, then you split the price with them and you go. What if you can't? Here's where sometimes taking a little bit of risk may be worth a little bit of reward. With most conventions, there are oftentimes places where through the convention's own forums or through major RPG forum websites, you can hook up with other people, other strangers who may be in the same situation you are. Hey, I'm coming from city XYZ. I've got nobody to go down with. So you can meet up with this guy, split the gas price, maybe even split a room. The downside to this is you're hanging with a stranger. You don't know the person. They could do something really horrible. I think more than criminal, you're probably going to deal with somebody who's criminally annoying. That's probably your biggest concern, is you may end up staying with somebody who's got annoying habits, isn't all that hygienic, I don't know, whatever. But look, here's the things I'm going to say in response to that. First off, most of those things, I think if you take a deep breath and remember that you're going to spend most of your time out of the room doing other stuff anyway, you can probably tolerate whatever's going on. Secondly, just as you risk running into someone who's annoying or difficult, you also run into the risk of meeting somebody who's really cool, maybe even lives in your area, and guess what? This may be the start of a beautiful friendship or brand new gaming group. So I would recommend, if you really want to go to a con and just can't find any way to do it, at least take a look around and see if you can find somebody to caravan or split prices with. That's why with Fear the Con, we always make sure there is a roomy and ride-sharing thread. We realize we're not drawing from 30 or 40,000 people like Gen Con is, but still, if there's people that we can get who are coming from the same place that can split the cost of gas and split the cost of hotel room, then by all means, we want to do everything we can to help facilitate that.
You know, just as a side note to that, one year at Gen Con, for one of the nights there, we had 12 people in a Super 8 motel room. It was an amazing experience.
See, that just goes back to my, at what point have you gone down the cheap route so much that...
That would be it.
How are you comfortable with 12 people in the room?
But it's still an experience, man.
That would be it.
You know what? You're always going to remember that.
It was an experience.
I'd rather sleep in my car than with 12 people in a room.
Yeah.
It depends on the people.
Okay, if it's like the Swedish bikini team, but given the fact it's
they definitely were not the Swedish bikini team. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, you can start a thread for that, though.
So there's our tips on what to do for a convention. If you've got tips of your own, then don't hesitate to stop by the blog at feartheboot.com or by the forums and share your own. Because remember, even though Fear the Con is coming up pretty quick, and once again, it's not too late to get registered if you haven't already.
Go, baby.
There are still events opening up. There are still people signing up. So whether you are a game master, a player, or both, get out there, join the con, create your own events, get stuff going, because it is still moving out there. But whether it's Fear the Con or Gen Con or whatever con it is you're looking at going to this year, get out there, post your tips on how to do it right. Help each other out. And we will catch you guys next week.
Later days.
Oh, sorry, Pat. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take that from you.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.